Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Blazer Banter Podcast. I'm Eric Gunderson, the Trailblazers beat writer for the Columbian. And this week we are joined by Stu Holdren, a.k.a. Stu Pendus, a Portland area rapper who just put out an album last week called Paid Time Off, which you can get on iTunes and Spotify. He's also a big basketball fan, big Blazer fan. So we talk a little bit about the Blazers, the finals, and we also talked about the rapping chops of one Damian Lillard.
It's the middle of the week, but it feels like it's Friday. Up late, popping bottles till I'm sideways. Overtime, I've been overworked and underpaid. See this day coming like these miles on the highway. Going 5 below the limit, I'm in no rush. Won't be clocking in today, I'm giving no fucks. Rolling dice, the bones been seeing no luck. Gambled on the come up, but I might have got a bit stuck. Got these dates on my calendar, all managed.
All right, we're joined now by Stu, a.k.a. Stupendous. Stu, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Eric?
Doing good. Trying to stay cool. It's going to be super, super hot today, I guess.
Yeah, well, I have air conditioning at my house, and it's like the best purchase I've ever made, so I'm pretty pumped about it.
Oh, man, that sounds like a life I want to live, but I'm a stubborn Oregonian.
Yeah, it's going to be a crispy 68 degrees at my house. It's going to be lovely.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Yeah, it's fan season at our place.
Ooh, man.
Yeah, so
our struggle is real.
Yeah, the struggle is very real in Southwest Portland.
Yeah.
You know, I guess yesterday was game one of the finals, but more importantly, you had an album just come out about a week ago, right?
Yeah, week and a half maybe. Yeah, so it just came out. It's called Paid Time Off. It's a 5-song EP, so very excited about it. It's actually the first music project that I've put out in almost 10 years, which is pretty crazy. So I was doing a lot of music back in college, spent a lot of time after college just focusing on work and my career and whatnot, and I'm finally getting back into the studio and making music, and so it's great. It's really fun to have some new music out there.
Obviously you are a big basketball fan, so you have lots of basketball references in your music, and I feel like they are references for like people that watch a lot of basketball, because it's like it's like references that aren't like that easy to get if you don't watch basketball or have followed it for some time.
For sure, yeah, it's a little bit of inside baseball or basketball, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like it definitely for people who kind of like have been fans throughout, the '90s is kind of was my heyday of basketball for sure. I've dropped some Princeton basketball references.
Princeton basketball. I think I heard a Syracuse reference in there. I think you connected Princeton with the late 80s Pistons as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I try to weave in some basketball references whenever I can, just because that's really one of my passions is basketball. And it's kind of part of my story. And it's easy to kind of make metaphors about basketball to within music. I think that music and sport really have a lot in common, and so it's kind of fun. It's part of the culture, and I think some people who are big basketball fans will get a kick out of it.
Yeah, no, totally. I love those basketball references. That those definitely got me, especially. And I think there is something to that. That I mean, music and sports really are like it is a lot of connection, because I feel like you always hear people talking about rhythm in sports.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's I think music is always tied, especially for basketball. Guys are doing their pregame, they have songs that pump them up, of course, basketball is a very much a rhythm game. It's like if you're in your rhythm, then you can get your shot off. You can, you know, see the floor. It's kind of having that rhythm is kind of ebb and flow that can really make your game step up to the next level. So I just think there's a lot of crossover there.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you recently had a daughter, right? And did how did that like kind of inspire, you know?
So I mean, basically, she was kind of my main inspiration to start getting back into music. Certainly, it's harder to do music when you have the responsibilities of parenthood, but you know, she was born, and I kind of took a step back and I thought about, you know, looking down the road of kind of the lessons that I wanted to share with her. And certainly I want her to be able to pursue her passions and, you know, not let those fall by the wayside just for her career or for work. So I felt like I kind of needed to lead by example and kind of tap back into my original passions. And that's the main reason why back. So I definitely would recommend to people, if they want to pursue something, don't wait until you have a kid. It doesn't make it any easier, but you know, sometimes it's like you have to have that motivation to get going. It's if you don't have the motivation, then it's just tough. So that's what she gave to me.
That's really cool. I imagine you have to be very I'm sure there's a lot of planning that has to happen when you're trying to record with having a kid.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a lot of coordination with my wife and making sure that I'm going to the studio at times that doesn't impact us too much. So a lot of times that means that I'm going really late or on weekends when she might have a little bit more help. So or it's just like managing your own schedule. It might be that I'm not staying up too late to watch a game, making sure that I'm going to bed on time so I can get up before everyone else wakes up and start some writing and that sort of thing. So yeah, there's kind of a logistical side to the creativity, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, it definitely is like, yeah, it is pretty interesting to see, to, you know, get a brief glimpse into that kind of process. I'm curious, how long did it take you to, you know, to put this together?
So I guess I started recording this music back in October. So that's about 6 months, which I think makes sense. You know, each song, you know, I might take a couple weeks really writing it and editing it down. And then you have to factor in the studio time and actually recording it. And then once the project is pretty much done, then you kind of mixing and mastering phases. So yeah, overall it took about 6 months.
Yeah, man, that's an undertaking too, especially with the job and everything else. So that's pretty cool though, and it's great music. I listened to it the other day, just for where people can get it, mm-hmm. You know, is that so just iTunes, and then you also have a mailing list, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So if people do want to buy it, or sometimes it's just more convenient for people to have all their music on iTunes, they certainly can buy it there. So my rap name is Stupendous, and the album is called Paid Time Off. And it's only $4, so it's not going to ding the wallet too much. But if you go to my website, which is stupendousmusic.com, and you sign up for the mailing list, right after you sign up, you'll get a download link, so you can just download the whole thing for free. But those are some two easy places to get it. You can also get it on like Spotify and Google Play and Tidal, you know, any sort of music streaming store. Basically, you can check it out there. So pretty much anywhere where there's digital music, you can find this. So I would appreciate if you could take the time to listen to it. I know that there's tons of good music out there. So, I love it when anyone takes the time to listen to it.
Did you have to talk to Jay-Z to get it on Tidal?
Yeah, direct lined it to Jay-Z. So
I saw that he the other day that he had a diss track about Spotify.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. It's getting real.
Yeah. I didn't listen to it because it was a diss track about Spotify, but
oh man,
No, that's when you know it's real. He's trying to it's like Nas again, but now it's Spotify.
Man, he's picking his battles, that's for sure.
That's awesome.
I actually use Tidal now just because I like the interface. Uh-huh. I just think it's easier to get around. And I don't do the super hi-fi audio just because, honestly, I can't tell the difference. But it's a cool service. So it's worth checking out if you can hop on that free trial.
One problem I always have with Spotify is when I'm listening to music and I search for something or I search for an album, especially rap albums, it always gives me the radio edit version.
Yeah, that's no good.
Does that happen on Tidal?
I'm not sure. I have searched, sometimes artists will only upload the edited version, which can be the problem. But yeah, I guess I haven't necessarily run into that problem too much.
Ah, okay. That's interesting. I didn't know that artists made that choice a lot of times. I always get mad at Spotify and want to write a diss track.
Yeah, no, the artist is the one kind of responsible for what files go up on all those sites. So yeah, you can blame your artist.
All right. Well, screw him. And obviously, you grew up in Oregon and so you grew up as a Blazer fan.
So I grew up in Albany. I've always been a huge Blazers fan. Did a lot of trips up to Portland to watch games as a kid. When I was in high school, I started this very basic blog, but it was all about the Blazers. It was called ptownblazers.com. And I was doing game recaps and kind of the rumor mill, trade possibilities, any kind of analysis that I could. I was super interested in the kind of journalism side of things, following the Blazers. And then after college, I actually interned with the Blazers in their community relations department. That was just kind of for a summer. I did that. Unfortunately, it didn't pay the bills, so I had to kind of move on to something else. But I had a good time when I was there. I did a lot of stuff in there, organizing their charitable donations was one of my big things, and any kind of community event the Junior Rose Parade or that sort of thing. So I got to hang out with Blaze a little bit, which was fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
The trail cat,
the one and only. Yeah. It was kind of interesting to get to know the man under the mask, and do some mascot talk with him. So that was kind of fun. Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, Blaze is a busy person. Can you confirm or deny that it is a man or a woman that is Blaze?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know who's under the mask now, but back then it was a man. Yeah.
Okay.
And he had a legit, background in gymnastics, and he had been a stunt guy before. So it's he took his job very seriously, and it took him a lot of work to get where he was at. So it's kind of crazy how much goes into that.
Yeah, that's crazy. I remember at U of O there were a lot of because there's at U of O there's always a rotating crew of people that are the duck.
Really? I didn't know that.
And there was a rotating crew of people, but you had to keep people couldn't if you were ever the duck, people just could not know that you were the duck.
Oh, yeah.
So there would be rumors after people had been done doing the duck that they were the duck, and it's just all this secret thing is really funny, but I'm imagining that there's some secrecy around who Blaze is.
Yeah, there definitely is secrecy. And what was funny is I drove over to the the Junior Rose Parade with him, and we got out of the car and we were getting ready to get set up, and he saw some other mascots that were in the parade who were just walking around with their masks off. And he was kind of like offended by that. He's like, that's like the number one rule as a mascot is you're never in public with your mask off. So he was like, you know, he was like amateur hour over there.
The etiquette has been breached.
Yeah, exactly. He broke the mascot code.
Oh, man. That's so awesome. That means he was Rick really hardcore. That's awesome that he was.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Yeah, that's really funny. And, you know, growing up, obviously watching the Blazers. I mean, there had to be some favorite players of yours. Like, I mean, who were some of those guys, like, growing up for you?
Yeah, I mean, my fandom kind of started, you know, in the early 90s, of course, with those teams that went to the NBA Finals. Definitely the 92 Finals team is the one that I really remember most vividly, you know, because I was 8 years old at that point, so I was really starting to get into basketball. So, of course, I love all the guys from that era, your Clydes and Bucks and Terry Porters of that time. So, that was big for me, but certainly the team that I remember most that was my favorite was that 2000 team with Sheed and Damon and Pippen and Sabonis, Steve Smith, those guys. That was really the team that I fell in love with. So as far as favorites, I actually have an interesting favorite. It's probably between Sheed and my other favorite was always J.R. Ryder, which I think I think falls off a lot of people's radar, but I loved his game. I loved his attitude. I loved that he could kind of overpower other two guards. He had this move where he'd kind of hop into the key and raise up for a little fadeaway jumper that I just loved. So, you know, they had so many characters on that team. It was just so fun to watch them.
Yeah, I was reading the other day because the Warriors have this crazy point differential, and a couple weeks ago, Nate Silver's website did like this rate. They use this rating system to rank the greatest teams of all time, and that 2000 Blazers team, in however the formula that they used, which includes like point differential and all this stuff and margin of victory and all everything, you know, they rank the 2000 Blazers as the best ones.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it kind of makes sense. You know, they were one quarter away from going to the finals against a team that they probably would have beat. So, you know, you can't rewrite history, of course, but it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess they should be in the conversation for the best Blazers team ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that they're – yeah, I mean, but talent-wise, like, yeah, you really can't argue, you know. And, they had that lead in that fourth quarter, and obviously we all know what happened there. But, you know, yeah, no, it's really interesting. I mean, that team was definitely in my lifetime definitely the deepest Blazers team that there's ever been.
For sure, yeah. I mean, they really went went pretty deep. I mean, they have guys that a lot of people forget about, like Greg Anthony, Stacey Augmon, and Dale Davis. You know, they had a lot of great role players, guys who could come in off the bench and just, you know, keep the lead or even expand on it. So, yeah, it's like you kind of forget about how talented that roster was from top to bottom.
I mean, you had Jermaine O'Neal on the team, and he didn't even play that year.
Totally, yeah.
You know, he didn't even play. That. Like they, like that. That was the craziest thing. It's like they had Jermaine O'Neal as a bench warmer, and like, you know, it's kind of funny because I think they kind of remind me a little bit of the Warriors because they obviously had like that. I mean, it's not quite as good as them, obviously, but like reminds me a little bit of them with like all the veterans they have, like how many accomplished guys that they have from top to bottom on that team. Because the Warriors have like 10, 11 guys that you can play and you really wouldn't lose anything. And I feel like that Blazers team was kind of like that with Detlef Schrempf off the bench and, you know, Greg Anthony and Stacey Augmon and, you know, like, they're just really good players in the league that were reserves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you look at that last night's game and Golden State went 10 deep. And on the other side, you know, Cleveland is just like, it's LeBron and Kyrie or nothing, basically.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, that was that game last night, it was a really good game, really close. Obviously, it went to overtime. Obviously, I really hope that Kyrie's not seriously injured, but
Yeah, if Kyrie misses time, that series is, to me, like, I don't think it'll really be much of a contest.
No, as Moses Malone once said, faux, faux, faux.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that's all I'm seeing. If Kyrie can't play, it's going to be a sweep. I don't even know if Cleveland gets one.
Yeah, I mean, like, who else is going to score? I mean, you have to get J.R. Smith to get some buckets. You know, last night he shot pretty poorly, and then you need Tristan Thompson to put up more than the two that he did, and Shumpert. I mean, LeBron's probably not going to. I mean, LeBron can get his 50, but where's the other 50 coming from?
Right, exactly. Like, this is the thing. It's like that's Golden State. Yeah, and that's the problem with Golden State. I mean, like, Golden State's offense didn't really play that great last night. I mean, they only scored like 98 in regulation.
Mm-hmm.
But the other crazy thing is too that, like, at the end of regulation, Steph, like, got by Kyrie for a layup, and then Kyrie got up and blocked it. So, like, right? It's weird to think that Kyrie, like, not only are they going to miss Kyrie on offense, but Kyrie was huge on defense last night for them.
Totally. Yeah, and it's like, if Kyrie comes back, you know he's not going to be even close to 100%. You know, he left on crutches last night.
Yeah.
So, and then he has to chase around Steph Curry. And as a hobbled person, that's probably not going to be, you know, not going to work out well for them.
No, not at all. And that's, it's pretty crazy that, you know, that this series is where it is. I really hope Kyrie's okay, because, you know, it's a shame he's not 100%, because this series would be really, really good, I think. But I just think Golden State's just got too much. I mean, they did last night anyway. It was pretty. I was really impressed with Iguodala. Iguodala had like just a great old man game. Yeah. Like, he just, like, I don't even know if he missed. It felt like he only missed like one shot and just played great defense on LeBron.
Even when he didn't have a shoe on, he was playing well.
Yeah, exactly. He made that one shot. So yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, no, I mean, the Warriors looked great last night, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens with the Cavs. I mean, obviously, I think this sets up, you know, if they lose pretty handily, and if they even get swept, I think there's almost no doubt that Kevin Love's going to stay then, because I think it'll be really easy for them to sell Kevin Love on just coming back. Like, we need you. Like, did you not just see this? You know, like, we really, really need you. Like, I think it wouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, it definitely could make him feel maybe a little bit more appreciated in this instance, you know, because there's something easy to point to say, like, you can really make a difference here. You're the missing piece that's going to actually get us over the hump. So yeah, that is an interesting take, and kind of ties back to the Blazers a little bit. You know, if LaMarcus ends up walking himself, you know.
Yeah.
Love is the biggest target that you might have any chance in hell getting, just because he is an unrestricted free agent. Right. Probably not likely anyway. But if you had to replace an Aldridge, Love would be kind of your main target, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that would be their best case scenario if Aldridge were to leave, is that they could get Love. I mean, I feel like that's it. I mean, there's Paul Millsap's a free agent, and then it's just kind of like, but like, even him, like, you know, he's not like a, you know, necessarily like a foundational piece. I mean, he's good, but yep. I don't necessarily think he's a guy that you like really build around, you know, as like the way Aldridge has been for Portland.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, he's a guy that you'd want on your team, but he's not. I mean, he's not going to give you what Aldridge gave you. And he's kind of the guy that you want, but you don't want him to be a focal point of your offense, I wouldn't say. Like, you know, he just doesn't have that star takeover ability on any consistent basis. So, you know, yeah, I like Millsap, but I think there are better options out there for the Blazers to build around.
Yeah, definitely. Who knows what they're going to do if LaMarcus leaves. That's going to be interesting. I'm really curious, though, of how fans are going to take it if he does leave.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a heartbreak for everyone who's a Blazers fan if he does leave. I mean, the way that I look at it, though, is the Blazers should you know, show him some love if he does leave. It's like he's given the Blazers everything he could. He's been the only redeeming part of that trio of Roy and Odom. I mean, over the long term, of course, right. We had some great years with Roy for sure. But he's kind of proved to be the mainstay. He's been a franchise player. He's like climbed up the Blazers record books. And he's fulfilled his contract with the Blazers. It's like, you know, he has every right to explore going elsewhere. So if he does leave, that's, you know, it's going to sting for us Blazers fans, but he's given us, you know, a great, what, last 8 years or so.
Yeah. I think it's actually nine.
Nine. True. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, he's been here for a while now. So, I mean, yeah, I think most Blazer fans that I talk to, especially if it's the Spurs, or Dallas or something like that, where he's going closer to home and they're two teams that people around here really don't hate.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing you really got to focus on. It's like, he can't go somewhere like the Lakers.
Yeah. Or even the Knicks.
I think
I think the Knicks would probably run people the wrong way. Probably. I don't know.
Yeah. The Knicks or the Lakers, you know, just cause Blazer fans have a distaste for the Lakers wouldn't go over well. I think something like the Knicks wouldn't go over well because it just feels like, oh, I just want to go to a big market and get more shine kind of thing. Yeah. And I don't think that would resonate well with Blazers fans either. So
yeah.
Yeah, he has to go to a respectable team, and if that happens, I think we'll get over it.
Right. Yeah. If he goes to a team that like he goes there and you look at it and you're like, okay, he has a way better chance to win a championship there than he has if he had stayed here. Like, I think at that point, I think most people would understand. And you know, I mean, he said he's always wanted to stay, but like I feel like also people get it. Like especially if it's the Spurs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so you can't argue with, you know, the track record of the Spurs, and of course, it's closer to home. And so, I mean, if that's what happens, so be it. But I do think, you know, if you look at this season up until the point where Wesley Matthews got hurt, I thought the Blazers had as good a chance as anybody to at least get to the Western Conference Finals. So, you know, it's not like he doesn't have an opportunity to build on that in Portland either.
Exactly. That's the other thing. It's like it is the other thing too is that there's also, I think this is an underplayed storyline. Like the infrastructure with the Spurs, like everyone trusts it, and Duncan and Popovich and all those guys. But there's also a lot of like uncertainty and like fuzziness with the Spurs right now that I feel like is almost like an underreported aspect of this whole situation.
Yeah,
because Tony Parker looked terrible in that first round series, and he's had health problems like every year for the past like 5 years, and I don't see that necessarily getting better. Kawhi Leonard is there, but you know, like he still needs some time to get ready, and I feel like as a big man, no matter how good you are, I feel like it's impossible to take over a game in the NBA as a big man these days.
I mean, it's tough. Yeah, I think Aldridge does it maybe better than any other big man. I mean, you look back into like that series with Houston last year. I mean, that was like the most dominant big man performance that I've seen in a long time, especially the way he does it. With those mid-range jump shots, it's pretty unheard of. I mean, the only other guy who does it like that is Dirk, I think.
Yeah.
It's crazy with the Spurs. You know, it's kind of in vogue to kind of talk about how old they are, but we've been saying it every year, and they keep proving us wrong. But like at some point, that's going to be for real. You know?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. like exactly. At some point, it will be. Like that's the thing. And I think the latest news was like that Ginobili was like leaning toward retiring. So you lose that, which is a huge part of the Spurs. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Parker's health, and then Danny Green is a free agent. And, you know, if someone pays him a lot of money, he could leave. And, I don't know. And like you were saying too, I mean, if Portland could get the band back together and Matthews is even like, you know, 80% of what he was, you know, that was a good team. And now that what you've got on top of Matthews with you know, you've got more reliable bench guys. In, you know, Myers Leonard can play now if you want him to come off the bench. CJ mm-hmm. McCollum can be a really good scorer too, and he can be like, you know, he could kind of be like Portland's version of Ginobili a little bit.
Yeah.
And you know, then you have got Dame. I guess it would maybe just come down to who he'd rather play with, you know, for the rest of his career. Because at best, I think Duncan's really only going to be there for one more year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think to me, it's like it is option one to get Aldridge back, just because you can't really find another player of his caliber in free agency. And, you know, it's tough to get big name players to come to Portland. So I think that has to be your first option. And then I do think you have to look into re-signing those guys, Wes and Rolo. But you know, if Aldridge ends up leaving, I don't think it's the end of the world. I mean, the reality is he's going to sign a big contract, and by the end of it, he's not necessarily going to be in his prime, and you're going to be paying a lot of money for a guy who's probably not going to be producing, in accordance to how much he's getting paid. So there is kind of a flip side to either situation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, spoken as a reformed blogger.
Yeah, that's right.
what was that NBA blog that you used to edit?
Yeah, so I used to be the editor for a blog called NBA Noise. I did that from probably about 2007 to 2010 or so.
Okay.
Yeah, so I
very early Twitter days.
Yeah, so that was kind of before basketball on Twitter was a thing. I mean, I was you know, dipping my toe into it. Twitter itself wasn't that big in 2007. But I remember the only other account that was really talking basketball at that time was Slam Online. And it's just funny because
it's just crazy.
Yeah. Now it's like, if you don't like basketball, you shouldn't even go on Twitter. Like when there's a big game going on, cause it's just like, just takes over, you know. It's just like this crazy community of basketball fans, which is awesome because you can have, you know, such good back and forth. You can talk with, you know, fans from other teams. You can get little rivalries going, and you can get, you know, all sorts of news so quickly. So it's so fun to be a basketball fan now on Twitter. But back then it was just like, you know, it was kind of a ghost town. And I remember I even at one point I decided to like live tweet a game in the Summer Olympics, and I had never seen anyone live tweet a basketball game before, so I thought I was being super innovative. And I'm not saying that I was the first to do it, but it's just like wasn't commonplace. And now people just have something to say about the whole game all the time.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you were a pioneer in the live tweeting blogosphere of Twitter that is now like, I mean, you can't like, yeah, exactly. Like you're saying, like, if you don't like basketball and you have a Twitter account, like you just have to leave. You can't log on during a game.
Yeah, exactly.
it's just crazy the amount of people that talk about it all the time. And yeah, I think we're living in a really good time to be a basketball fan. Cause like, anytime something big happens, there's like a Vine in like 5 seconds.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I did a Vine, for that game went super late against the Clippers.
Back in
March. Yeah. Where DeAndre had a chance to kind of seal the game when he got that rebound right by the hoop, and he held on to it, and Chris Paul is jumping up and down yelling in his face.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I got a quick Vine of that and put it up there, and like that was like probably my most popular tweet in ages, you know. Just and it just, you know, spreads like wildfire just because it's so hilarious. But just a prime example of how quickly things move on Twitter.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, and how great it is that, like, you know, any little thing too, it doesn't even have to be a highlight that people find, and it just like instantly goes up on Vine. But I remember that game. That game was speaking of how good the Blazers were before Wes went down, man.
Mm-hmm.
That game was like, that was like their best game, that you like, of probably one of their best wins, if not their best win of the year. Like,
It was such a good comeback. But before the comeback, I was kind of disgusted, I remember. A couple times, like, should I turn it off, you know?
Yeah.
But then, you know, Batum was doing his point forward thing, and they just kind of gelled all at the right time, and they were doing the hack of Jordan
thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a super interesting game.
Yeah, no, I remember that was a game. I don't remember exactly how many, but Damian had like a career high in rebounds. It was like 18.
That's right.
It was like 18 or 19 rebounds, and like they were doing that lineup with Batum, Wes, Dame, Aflalo, and then LaMarcus at center.
Mm-hmm.
And they just rode that lineup and just absolutely killed them. I mean, it was just like in that overtime, like they just absolutely ran away with it, and it was like. Yeah, that was like the game where you were like, wow, like this is the team that you can see, like they can switch everything. They might be able to contend with the Warriors. And then literally the next night, Wes's Achilles went out.
Yeah. It's crazy. I actually went to that game when Wes got hurt, and I remember him getting hurt. And I remember him kind of, he was on his knees and then the play stopped and he kind of rolled to his back. And I remember kind of thinking he might just be playing it up. Like, I was like, I think he's kind of maybe just being a little bit dramatic here. And, come to find out he wasn't. But I wish I was right about my assessment of his body language there.
I saw him on the ground. Like, I had just come back to my seat. And I saw him on the ground. And I thought that he turned an ankle. Or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought he just turned an ankle and he was like, okay, I'm just going to walk it off or whatever and just lay there and help me. But then, you know, someone mentioned to me too, it's like, that's not Wes. Like, Wes doesn't do, like, you know, waiting around for an injury when it's not, like, serious. Like, Wes wants to play all the time, you know? Yeah. And that was the sign, like, I was thinking kind of like you, like, you know, he's just embellishing a little bit. He's had a long game. They just played last night, but... Yeah, no, it was, it was crazy.
I will say I have a pretty bad gauge for that kind of stuff because maybe it might have been a week or two before that. I went to a game that was against the Thunder, Russell Westbrook took a knee to the face.
Yeah, and he broke his face.
Yeah, and broke his face, and I was like, oh, come on, get over it, you know, and then the next day I saw that picture of him with basically a divot in his cheek, so I was like, oh okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of for real.
Yeah, no, and I remember, like, I can't even imagine what that would be like, because I read, like, the next day, like, showed, like, a graphic on, like, ABC or something like that of the procedure that Westbrook had to do. And they had to stick, like, a metal – they had to, like, cut, a little incision in his head or whatever and stick, like, a metal bar into it to pop the cheekbone back out.
Too much.
Yeah, oh, man, it just looked terrible. Oh, man. But, you know, one other thing I wanted to talk about with you know, while you're here is – we've talked about music and all that stuff, and Damian Lillard obviously is very very passionate about rapping, and he does the Four Bar Friday and stuff like that. What do you think about the Four Bar Friday stuff? And you know, kind of second question, I guess, would be like, you know, where does he rank, you know, like with like the other NBA rappers of past and present, I guess.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, Dame has an awesome flow. I mean, he was the one who started the whole Four Bar Friday thing, which is pretty commendable in itself because it's really taken off. I was actually looking it up just a few days ago, and the hashtag Four Bar Friday has almost 50,000 uses on Instagram. So that's a lot of people rapping, you know? So I think it's pretty cool that Dame kind of started that movement. So for people who don't know what this is, it's like basically people get on and they record themselves rapping four lines, and they hashtag it with Four Bar Friday, and it kind of goes out to everybody who's interested in rap music. The thing that's really cool about Dame is he really raps about personal stuff, you know, how he's feeling at any given moment. I've seen him kind of go back to the days of him dreaming of being an NBA player, or the feelings of being overlooked or being the underdog. So you really kind of get to know him, or get to know a different side of him, which is pretty cool. He even talks about Portland, or I've seen him make, you know, Rose City or Rip City references in the past. So, yeah, it's super fun to watch him do that. As far as where he ranks amongst rappers in basketball, it's, you know, there are several rappers, or guys who rap in the league, like right now, like Lance Stevenson put out a song.
Iman Shumpert.
Iman, yeah. Even Kevin Durant has dabbled in rap. So, I think Damian has a great flow, and some of his lines I think are really good, but it's just so hard to compare that to someone who's putting out a full song, just because it's very easy to pack in a lot of value in four lines as opposed to doing it over three verses. So it's difficult to compare, but I think if Damian were to come out with a song, or even like an album, I think he probably would be the best, or at least among the best of the guys in the league right now.
Yeah, we've asked him before, media have, or at least I have, you know, when's a mixtape or an album coming out? And then, you know, he always answers it with, or at least when he has answers, he's like, I'm a basketball player. And he tries to, like, go down that way. So he doesn't come out and say that he wants to do it. I think it's this kind of a thing where once it actually does come out, then he'll talk about it. But I don't think he wants to talk about it, like, before it gets done and stuff like that. Because it'll open him up to a lot of that criticism that when guys do something outside of actual basketball, they get told to go back into the gym.
Yeah, and he's not going to get too much scrutiny for just messing around on Instagram and throwing up four lines, you know.
Like 15 seconds.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, it's, you know, this guy is not going to need to invest too much time to come up with something clever to say on Instagram. Whereas if you're putting out a whole album, that really does take time. So also kind of shows that your focus might be elsewhere. So, I mean, it's tough. You know, a lot of these guys are interested in music. You know, they have connections within music, you know, they have friends in music, and then they have the money to actually invest in creating music. So I think that's part of the reason why you see a lot of players kind of trying to make a mark in music as well.
You know, there have been a lot of rappers over the years, not guys that are just in the league. I mean, you had Steven Jackson, and then also Shaq is probably the most famous example of a player. Maybe it could be like a top. Can you be like a top three or top two of like NBA player rappers?
Yeah, I think Shaq is my favorite, and I think he like controls the mic better than any rapper. I mean, he definitely has. I mean, he's just powerful when he's rapping, just like his game, I guess. But I love his swagger and his confidence. So I think Shaq is probably my top. It's interesting. You know, Allen Iverson actually was pretty decent. I don't know if you remember him dabbling in it, but he went by the name Jules back in the day. But he was kind of dope. I liked Allen Iverson.
I just started reading the book that just came out about him.
Is that?
It's really interesting. I mean, it's kind of sad because he, like, I mean, I didn't know this about him, but, like, I guess he was and, like, I think still is, like, a little bit – an alcoholic. Like, he used to – like, he would drink a lot and, like allegedly – I mean, I just read an article about this the other day, but, like I guess he was, like – he might have been drunk for the practice rant.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, I mean, I believe it. Yeah. I mean, that rant was something that you wouldn't expect anyone to say, but will probably go down in history as one of the most classic interviews ever.
Yeah, no, definitely. No, I you know, I don't remember the AI rapping days. I just vaguely remember there was a backlash about his rapping. Like, he was rapping, and then they would, like, play parts of it with, like, bleep it out on, like, SportsCenter, and then they'd have, like, X person come over here, like, Allen Iverson's a terrible person and a terrible influence on the youth and all that stuff. Like, you know?
You know who actually was pretty decent but isn't a big-name player is Troy Hudson. Do you remember Troy Hudson?
Troy Hudson. Yeah, I remember Troy Hudson.
For the T-Wolves and the Clips for a while.
Yeah, like number 30 for the T-Wolves or stuff like that. Yeah.
He had like a little like mini dreads kind of going on.
Yeah. I didn't know he rapped.
I think he went by T-Hud, and he actually has some pretty good skills. Some guys that I'm not putting him in my top by any means, but did you know that Kobe put out some rap music?
Oh my gosh. There's a Grantland article about it.
Yeah.
And is this what you're talking about?
I haven't read the Grantland article, but I remember having like I downloaded a Kobe song back in the day. It was him and Tyra Banks on a song. It was incredible.
Oh my gosh. No, there's a you should look up that. I'll send it to you. I'll find it and send it to you. Like, it's this verse that Kobe spits, and it's absolute fire. Like, it's like it's like 18 or 19 year old Kobe, and it's just bars. Like, it is good.
Wow.
Yeah,
I'd love to check that out. That's really cool.
I feel like in the 2000s, and just everybody probably felt like, obviously AI and Kobe both felt like they could rap. I guess I don't know. Maybe I'm just surprised, and maybe I'm surprised that Kevin Garnett never rapped. But
It seems like he would have the kind of demeanor for it. So intense, like kind of a DMX vibe, I would think.
Oh my gosh, yeah, like KG barking at you on the mic. Yeah, like, that would be crazy. Oh man,
maybe I can get him on a feature, just barking.
Yes, yeah. Hit up his people. Your people will talk to his people, and we'll make it happen. Just let me know, and I'll break the news that KG's coming on the Stupendous track.
I love it.
All right, Stu, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. It was a good time.
Yeah, and tell people again where they can find the latest album and any of your music.
Sure, yeah. So if you just go to stupendousmusic.com, that's the best place to start. Otherwise, you can go to iTunes, Spotify, Tidal, Google Play, anything like that. And the artist name is Stupendous, and the EP name is Paid Time Off. So definitely check it out and let me know what you think.
Boom.
Boom. Oh, and you can find me on Twitter at Stupendous.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Stu, once again. Have a great day, man.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Burning it too quick, both ends of the damn stick. Get it how you hustle, got this debt, but I'ma pay it off. Push until exhaustion, now these muscles don't decay at all. Aiming at these targets, but I tend to pray and spray them all. One day I'ma hit it big, but until then I stay involved. Paid time off, now I'm free. Making money while I'm sleeping, jumping off the deep end, go and let the weekend seep in. Paid time off.